The following program was previously recorded and is sponsored by Danny Yamashiro Ministries. This is 99.5 The Word.
Aloha and welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Danny Yamashiro here. Welcome to The Good Life. We're here to help unleash your God-given purpose, offering perspectives of hope through Jesus Christ. How important are research and statistics in view of the pro-life movement? Tessa Longbons joins us to explain the impact of good research to provide information that saves lives of preborn human beings. We pause here at the beginning of our show, as we typically do, to remind you the reason we have the Good Life Radio program, well, dear friend, is to lead you closer and closer to Jesus Christ. For you to know that no matter what you're facing, no matter how tough things may seem to be, there is always hope in Jesus. In Jesus, who loves you so much, he died on the cross for your sins. Jesus shed his blood on that cross to wash your sins away. He was buried, but 3 days later, he rose again from the grave. And today, this moment, yes, this moment, the living Christ reaches out to you. Will you turn to Jesus? Will you turn to God's way? Away from your way to God's way, that's called repentance. Away from your sins to God's way through Jesus Christ. That's our prayer. That's our hope. Tessa Longbons is Senior Research Associate with the Charlotte Logier Institute, where she writes on state and national abortion statistics. She tracks abortion trends and assists the Data Analytics Department with research projects. Prior to joining CLI, Tessa got her start in pro-life research with the Family Research Council. She's originally from Illinois. She now lives in Washington, D.C. She earned her bachelor's degree in communications from Thomas Edison State University. Tessa, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on.
So I mentioned in the intro about you originally being from Illinois. Take us further. Give us a little bit more information. Where in Illinois did you grow up?
So I grew up in rural Illinois, right across the street from a cornfield, actually, in the northwest corner. So for those of your listeners who are familiar with Illinois geography, close to the Quad Cities. So not too far from Iowa, right across the Mississippi River.
What was it like growing up there, next to the Quad Cities?
It was a great place to grow up. I'm very close with my family, and it was a happy childhood. My family raised me to know the gospel, which I'm grateful for, and we just had a very happy childhood. Really like living out in the country. I think great opportunities for kids to just run around and experience nature.
You mentioned family, Tessa. Who influenced you most in your growing up years?
Well, certainly my parents did. My mom has a love of reading, and so she shared that with me from a young age. And then my dad is very interested in politics and current events, and he encouraged me to make the move to Washington, D.C., which I ended up doing. I've been here for about 5 years now, but was also influenced by people in my church and family friends. So I had a lot of good influences in my life that impacted me at different points along the way.
When did you discover an interest in statistics and data analytics?
Well, certainly it wasn't what I initially had thought of for myself. Like you said in my introduction, I majored in communications. I've always been drawn to words and ideas, but I knew that I wanted to get involved in the pro-life movement somehow and wasn't sure exactly what that would look like. But after I graduated from college, I moved to Washington, D.C. and did a couple of internships and ended up getting connected with the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which is where I still am. And it was through the work of the Charlotte Lozier Institute that I really saw how I could be plugged into the pro-life movement and also bring to bear my love of words and ideas and research and combine those two passions. So it was a bit of a roundabout journey, but looking back, I can see how God was guiding me to where I ultimately ended up.
You mentioned God guiding you. I mean, it sounds also like a convergence point, you being there at the Lozier Institute. Talk a little bit more about your faith. How has your faith influenced your commitment to the pro-life cause?
Well, I always tell people when I get this question that I'm not pro-life because of my faith. I think that science is very clear. Biologists agree that life begins at fertilization. It's very well established, beginning from Carnegie stage 1A, the unborn human being develops from that fusion of the sperm and the egg all the way through 9 months to birth and then beyond. So it's not, my pro-life perspective is not rooted in my faith, but it is my faith that informs my value for all life, that tells me that life is valuable because we are all created in the image of God. And it's because the unborn children are created in the image of God that I recognize them as fellow image bearers who deserve protection and respect.
Where were you? Where were you, Tessa, on June 24th, 2022, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade?
It was a very surreal day. I was here in our office in Arlington, which is right outside of D.C., and of course, as I'm sure it was for all of your listeners, every day that went by without the Supreme Court releasing its decision in Dobbs, we were getting more and more pent up with excitement and anticipation and just wondering what the decision would be. And so one of us had a feeling that it was going to be that day. And so right before the court released its opinion, we all gathered together to wait for the decision together. And it was just an incredible moment after 49 years of the pro-life movement and Americans working to overturn Roe v. Wade to see that it had actually happened. And so many people were crying. I was crying. And we were just hugging each other and celebrating and just trying to take in what had just happened.
Hmm. Why the tears? Why the jubilance? Where did that come from? It's such a deep emotion of joy and tears of joy. Why the joy, Tessa?
Well, for me, it was the realization that door had been opened for us to truly make an impact for moms and babies and families, that now states would have the ability to pass laws that would protect life, that pro-lifers in those states, that people in those states, churches would be able to get involved on an even greater level to rally around families and support them. And I could just see that for the first time in my lifetime, this Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade, that had been just standing in the way of everything that we want to do to be able to support moms and babies had been dismantled. And so for the first time, we really had the opportunity now to step in a unique way And so I was just so thankful to God and excited for the future, just to see how we can give women true opportunity and true alternatives and really support them in a way that abortion does not.
It must be, and I'm speaking in a way figuratively here, the deep level of fulfillment, knowing that the numbers that are being crunched and the numbers that are being, the data that are being analyzed and assessed and synthesized and then written into reports and presentations, much from your pen or from collaboration with others and your pens work together to produce resources. That just must really have been fulfilling to see that. But there's more work to be done. When we come back from our break, we're going to hear more from Tessa Longbons. Tessa is the Senior Research Associate with the Charlotte Logier Institute. Of course, you know what happened on June 24, 2022, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Yes, there was a lot of celebration, elation, jubilation, but more work to be done. What's ahead? What are the challenges before us? How ought those challenges to be faced? Well, Tessa is here with us to share from her studies, her information from Charlotte Logier. LogierInstitute.org. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. This involves exercise and a range of sporting activities. There are times, though, when injuries take place resulting from sports, work, or even the effects of age. In some cases, surgical care is necessary to facilitate proper healing. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, with offices at both Polymomi and Kuakini. Dr. Calvin Oishi has treated patients with the compassion, care, and expertise second to none. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, 484-2042. 484-2042.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. Many people tell me how the Good Life Radio Show has made a difference in their lives, how they've shared our free podcasts with family and friends from thegoodlifehawaii.com. Others have connected on Facebook and Twitter. This is made possible through our corporate sponsors. Thank you to Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Burt's Union Service Station on School Street, Michael Beasley of Kayani, Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, Chinen and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated, A1A Electrician, and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi. To find out how to become a corporate sponsor, click Partners at thegoodlifehawaii.com. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, Hawaii's only local inspirational Christian talk show, on 99.5 The Word, weekdays at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight, providing opportunities to connect family and friends with Jesus Christ.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Tessa Longbons is Senior Research Associate with the Charlotte Logier Institute, where she writes on state and national abortion statistics. She tracks abortion trends and assists in the data analytics department with research projects. You can find out more about her and Logier Institute at logierinstitute.org. Tessa, what is chemical abortion?
So chemical abortion, it's also known as RU486 or the abortion pill, but it is a two-part process that induces an abortion. And the first pill, mifepristone, is pretty heavily regulated by the FDA because it carries some significant risks with it. But it blocks progesterone, which is a hormone that is necessary for sustaining a pregnancy. So a woman would take mifepristone, and then a day or two later, she would follow it with another pill called misoprostol, which induces contractions so that her body would then expel the baby and other pregnancy tissue. So it is a pretty painful type of abortion that takes a few days to complete. Women experience it different ways, but many of the accounts that I've analyzed in my work, women have talked about experiencing pain and bleeding, and just being unprepared for it emotionally, and it is carries a higher rate of complications than does surgical abortion, and it is increasing in the United States, which is something that we're concerned about.
In what ways, as you give us this explanation, in what ways will allowing chemical abortions by mail be impacted by the SCOTUS ruling?
That will vary from state to state, and a lot of it is still in flux, I think, as the administration decides how it's going to respond. But even before the court had issued its opinion in Dobbs, we saw the spread of abortion by mail. The abortion industry had actually been pushing for this for a long time, but they were unable to implement it because ever since the FDA first approved mifepristone in 2000, it was governed by regulations called a risk evaluation and mitigation strategy, or a REMS. And part of the REMS was the requirement that mifepristone only be dispensed in person from a licensed medical facility, which meant that it could not be sent through the mail and could not be dispensed in regular pharmacies. But the abortion industry has been pushing against this for a long time. In fact, there was a doctor in Hawaii who filed a court case trying to get the FDA to overturn this rule. And ultimately, during the pandemic, another group successfully sued the FDA and said that it was too dangerous for women to come into the abortion center during the pandemic, and so that they should be able to send chemical abortion pills through the mail. So the FDA eventually agreed, and then they ended up updating the regulations to allow for the pills to be sent through the mail, which is very concerning because there are risks associated with these drugs. If a woman has an ectopic pregnancy that's not diagnosed because she never sees her doctor in person, that puts her life at risk. If she needs follow-up care, since these pills have pretty high incomplete abortion rate, she's at risk of infection and bleeding. And there's also the risk of coercion, too, because even before abortion by mail became widespread, we had seen accounts of abusive boyfriends or traffickers obtaining these pills illegally and giving them to women without their knowledge or consent. And so that's something that's only going to increase now that the availability is more widespread. So many reasons to be concerned about the growth of this form of abortion.
Describe some of the implications. Maybe take us a little bit further. How are the FDA's data flawed?
So the FDA. Yes. So the FDA, when they made this decision, this recent decision to allow abortion by mail, they said that they had reviewed all the available data and they didn't see any concerning rates of complications. But like you mentioned, the problem with that is that FDA data is flawed. One of our scholars did an analysis comparing FDA's complication data, their adverse event data, with what had been independently published by Planned Parenthood. And she found that Planned Parenthood had twice the number of adverse events in their own independent publication than were in FDA system, even though FDA was supposed to be having complication data from all abortion providers, not just Planned Parenthood, which does about 40% of all abortions. So clearly, that's showing that FDA was not capturing all complications. In fact, one estimate suggested that they missed 95% of serious adverse events. And then on top of that, in 2016, they changed the complication reporting requirements so that now abortion providers are only required to report deaths that are caused by chemical abortion and not all serious adverse events. So they're not even collecting most complication data anymore. So not really a reliable source of data for saying that abortion by mail is safe.
So we identify some of the problems. As we go forward with the turn of events recently in June, what are some challenges that you, Tessa, see in front of us, and how ought we to be prepared for that and carry things through?
Certainly, I think chemical abortion is a challenge, and just all of the misinformation that's going around these days. Women are scared, and then they're getting online or turning on their TV and hearing things like, you won't be able to get care for a miscarriage. You won't be able to get care for an ectopic pregnancy. Both of those things are false. That is not true. Women are being told that they will end up going to jail if they need to go to the hospital. That is not true. And so I think a lot of women are being fed this misinformation and are not knowing what's true and what's not. And that will only push them into really choosing these unsafe forms of abortion, like chemical abortion by mail. And so I think that's something that, well, certainly that's something that we have tried to push back on and are continuing to push back on at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, just making sure that accurate information is out there. And I think that all Christians just need to be aware of what's happening, and so that when we are encountering women or girls that we know who are in difficult situations, who are trying to decide how they're going to handle an unexpected pregnancy, we can give them accurate information. And also, I think the churches will just need to be ready to support all of the women who will be needing support for unintended pregnancies, or pregnancies that may have been intended, but then they discovered that something might be wrong with the baby, and they need to think through how best to work through that. And so I've really been impressed by how well churches and other pro-life organizations have really rallied around and gotten ready. But I know that there's always more work to do, and there will just continue to be more work to do in the Dobbs era.
Let's take a few steps back. Take a different perspective. When it comes to the abortion industry, how is the abortion industry profit-driven?
Well, certainly they're profit-driven in the sense that they make money off of women's decisions to end their pregnancies. They have a vested interest in women choosing abortion. And also they're profit-driven in the sense that they are willing to sacrifice safety and women's health, not to mention unborn children, to making abortion more widespread. They push abortion at all costs. We've seen this most recently with abortion by mail, but they are willing to expand abortion in ways that just increases abortion rates and puts women's health at risk. And so we've seen certainly with Planned Parenthood, they like to talk about how abortion is just a fraction of their services. But when you look at all of the services that they do for pregnant women that are pregnancy-related, abortion, miscarriage care, prenatal care and referrals, adoption referrals, abortion makes up over 95% of all of their pregnancy resolution services. So it's certainly a huge part of their business. And that's true of the abortion industry as a whole.
Well, in view of that, let's think about, well, here, why do pro-choice proponents claim pro-life arguments have little impact?
I think it depends on the argument. I think it comes from just a disconnect in how we see the unborn child and how we see abortion impacting women. And most pro-choice people are not pro-choice because they think that abortion is a good thing. They genuinely want to help women. They think that abortion is something that will help them get out of difficult situations, will help them to live their lives in the freest and most independent way. But in my research here at Charlotte Lozier Institute, I've just seen time and time again how that is not actually true, that abortion doesn't solve women's problems. In fact, we've spent a lot of time digging into Medicaid data because that's the best source of abortion data in the United States, looking at the experiences of millions of women who have had abortions and births funded by Medicaid. And we've seen that women who have abortions just go on to have more pregnancies overall, and those pregnancies are more likely to end in more abortions. So abortion isn't solving women's problems. It's just putting them on this path where they're actually putting themselves at risk of having more abortions, which increases their health risk, which increases their emotional risk. And so as someone who's pro-life, I can say that abortion is not solving women's problems. And if we really want to help women, we should be rallying around them and offering them real options that don't take the life of their unborn children.
You're listening to Tessa Longbons. She is with the Lozier Institute, the Senior Research Associate there at Charlotte Lozier Institute. When we come back, we'll talk about surprises. She's got her hands, as it were, in the weeds of data. Are there surprises that she and her colleagues have found recently or over the course of their research? What's the latest data post the June 24th SCOTUS ruling in terms of impact on states? These questions and more answered by Tessa Longbons in a conversation that you, dear friend, we are grateful that you're with us. These are challenging times and hopeful times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath a barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Have you heard the stories on the Good Life Hawaii radio show with Danny Amashiro and his guests?
Yup. I listen to Danny's show every day. Those testimonies inspire me in my life at work, with my family, and in my relationship with God.
Did you ever visit thegoodlifehawaii.com? There's all kinds of resources there. Danny Amashiro has interviewed hundreds of guests on subjects like parenting, business, relationships, depression, overcoming addiction, hope, and so much more.
As a matter of fact, I have. Did you know there are videos where Danny prays for your family, your finances, even a video I've used to help lead my friends to Christ?
Wow. And I hear Danny is offering special opportunities and benefits for his Good Life Partnership Club members.
Yep. Go to thegoodlifehawaii.com and remember to connect with Danny on Facebook. Follow him on Twitter, too. That's Danny Yamashiro.
I'm going to visit thegoodlifehawaii.com today.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out? Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created.
Hear me calling
to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Yes, Tessa Longbons is the Senior Research Associate with the Charlotte Logier Institute. Find out more at logierinstitute.org. If you're tuning in right now, maybe caught the tail end of that last segment. Look, you can get this program in its entirety. Just go to thegoodlifehawaii.com. Tessa, surprises. Recently or in the recent past, in the research findings you and your colleagues have come up with. Any surprises?
Some sad surprises. We actually recently published a paper looking at the impact of chemical and surgical abortion on women. And for those who weren't listening earlier, chemical abortions are abortions that are induced with the drugs mifepristone and misoprostol. They happen chemically as opposed to surgical abortions that are performed using a procedure. And chemical abortions have a higher rate of complications. And so we wanted to see how this impacted women in the month following their abortions. And so we were looking at Medicaid data because we really don't have good abortion data in the U.S. Some states don't even report any abortion data at all, and many states don't collect any complication data. And so Medicaid data is really the best source of data that we have. And so we started by identifying chemical and surgical abortions and then followed women 30 days out to see what their rates of emergency room visits were. And we were struck by what we found. We saw that women who had a chemical abortion had a more than 50% greater risk of visiting the emergency room for an abortion-related reason compared to women who had surgical abortions. And not only that, the rate of abortion-related emergency room visits for women who had chemical abortions increased by over 500% between 2002 and 2015. And the rate for surgical abortions increased as well, but not by as much. So that was really striking and concerning for us. And another thing that we noticed in that study was that by 2015, 60% of the women who were going to the emergency room for a reason related to their chemical abortion had their chemical abortions miscoded as miscarriages. So they weren't reflected in the emergency room data as related to an abortion, but we knew that they were because we could see in the records that the women had an abortion 30 days or 30 days prior or less. So we knew that it was related to the abortion. So that was just something that was drove home to us the fact that a lot of our data in the U.S. is flawed when it comes to abortions and abortion complications, and that there are some significant risks that are associated with chemical abortion and the fact that chemical abortions are increasing across the country and now make up over half of all abortions.
What can be done when you see flawed data, misinformation, and you discover what is surprising, but it's not a happy surprise, it's a sad surprise, compelling nonetheless because you're looking at data. What can be done? You talk about complications that you see. What can be done about it?
There are a lot of things that can be done, actually. Certainly on a policy level, states can enact laws that regulate or limit chemical abortion, or at least require that complications are reported so that there's better data. And also, we can continue to do research, like the research that we have done, looking at how it's impacting women. And then most important, we need to just get the facts out. And that's where the work of churches, pro-life people, everyday Americans is so important, just to make sure that women have all the facts. We hear often that chemical abortion is safe, but then when we actually look at the data and just follow the trajectory of its impact on women, we can see that it's actually having a negative impact. And we need to listen to what women are actually saying and what their experiences are. One of my research projects was looking at what women were saying online anonymously about their experiences with chemical abortion, and then analyzing those accounts, looking for common themes, trying to really get a handle on what women's experiences were. And it was heartbreaking. Women talked about how stigmatized they felt going through chemical abortion, that they felt alone and silent, that they had no alternatives, no one to talk to, and that they felt unprepared for the pain and bleeding that they experienced. Some women talked about being unprepared for seeing the body of their unborn baby. So it's a truly terrible experience for someone to go through on her own. And so we need to be able to talk to women about it, and women who might be coming to us asking for help with an unplanned pregnancy. And we need to be able to offer them real hope and real alternatives to a dangerous abortion drug.
Tessa, will you share some of the latest data post June 24th SCOTUS ruling on the impact on states?
Yes. So a lot of this we're still waiting to see, as states are allowing their pro-life laws to go into effect now that the Dobbs decision has dismantled Roe v. Wade and allowed states to decide this issue for themselves. And so we're watching states put these laws into effect. And of course, there will be a lot, the landscape of abortion will be shifting dramatically. There will be more women traveling from state to state for abortions. But we know that these laws have the potential to save tens of thousands of lives. Just looking at the most recent published data from a lot of these states that have recently passed laws or enacted laws to protect life, over 100,000 abortions occur in these states. And there are more states that are considering laws, more states that are working to tighten up the laws that they have. And so the number of abortions that will be impacted will only grow. And so we'll be watching to see, as these states continue to release statistics, how this is borne out in the numbers that they're reporting. One of the challenges of really measuring the impact of pro-life laws is the fact that some states like California, Maryland, and New Hampshire, which together account for about a fifth of all abortions, don't collect or report abortion data. So we don't really know exactly how many abortions are taking place in those states. And California in particular is holding itself out as a destination for women who are seeking abortions. So certainly there will be lots of challenges when it comes to really measuring the impact. But just in the experiences of Texas, which had its heartbeat law in effect even prior to the Supreme Court's decision, which was limiting abortion at around 6 weeks of gestation, we know that lives have been saved in Texas. There was an account recently of a woman who was thinking about abortion, but then because of the law in Texas, ended up giving birth to twins. And so those are just a couple of the babies that have been saved because of the laws of pro-life states like Texas and other states. So we know that because the Supreme Court has paved the way for states to protect life, there's the potential just to save tens, if not hundreds of thousands of babies.
Saving these human lives, how soon will we begin to see the population increase in varying states in the nation, and therefore the impact of that? What would that look like as more lives are saved, more human beings growing up, more human beings? What are the social implications of that? It's sort of a fresh, isn't it a fresh discussion that needs to be had or talked about because of where we've been over the last 50 years, living under the curtain or behind the curtain or under the cloud of what was recently changed?
Yes. For the first time in 50 years, we are having the opportunity to have these discussions and talk about what the laws should look like in each state and what the American people want their abortion laws to look like. And states now, for the first time in almost half a century, have the ability to decide this for themselves. And so you're exactly right. This is going to continue to be a hot topic of discussion. And I think it will really look different from state to state, the ultimate impact. I mean, certainly we can anticipate that there will be an increase in births. There's been research from other countries suggesting that when countries pass pro-life laws, that ultimately pregnancies go down. And so there aren't as many abortions and there aren't as many births. Although, I mean, birth rates remain around the same overall, but that abortions don't always contribute to a long-term, that limiting abortion doesn't always contribute to a long-term excess in birth. So there may be some of that, too, in certain states. I think that's one of the exciting things is that we get to watch and see how this will look from state to state. And states will respond differently in how they help women, how they welcome the babies that are being born. We've already seen this as states are coming up with new and creative ways to meet the needs of women and families and to welcome these new babies. Just recently in Georgia, they passed legislation that will make it easier to open housing for pregnant women who need a place to live. We've seen in other states they've gotten creative with tax credits to support organizations that exist to serve women and families. Texas, they have a $100 million alternatives to abortion program that exists to provide women with real alternatives to abortion. And so I think we'll see a lot more of that as states really figure out this new landscape and figure out the best way that they can serve women and protect life. And it will be exciting to see.
Tessa, when we come back, we're going to take our break now. And when we come back for our final segment, I am interested to hear more about your journey. I think our listeners may want to hear more about there's a gift that you have. You're able to synthesize, but that communication gift, you know, you got your BA in communications. That comes out pretty clear just listening to you. And I'd like to hear more about that part of your journey, especially in view of the pro-life cause. You did mention earlier, Tessa Longmans did mention earlier, she talked about her religious background, her faith background. But she says she's pro-life, not because of religion, but because of science. We'll come back to that, maybe expand on that a little bit more when we come back. More from Tessa Longmans, LozierInstitute.org. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky. Leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
In times of economic challenge, opportunities arise. All we need is someone to say, I believe in you. Michael Beasley, a senior executive of Kaiani Team Aloha, has seen Kaiani products improve the quality of people's lives. Michael Beasley says Kaiani's mission is to empower people globally to experience better health, wealth, and a lot of fun. Contact Michael Beasley at 277-9528. Live outside the 9-to-5 workday. Become the CEO of your own business while Kaiani handles the details. That's Michael Beasley at 277-9528. 277-9528. Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. There are times when injuries take place. In some cases, surgical care is necessary. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, with offices at both Palimomi and Kuakini. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi at 484-2042, 484-2042.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. Many people tell me how the Good Life Radio Show has made a difference in their lives, how they've shared our free podcasts with family and friends from thegoodlifehawaii.com. Others have connected on Facebook and Twitter. This is made possible through our corporate sponsors. Thank you to Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Burt's Union Service Station on School Street, Michael Beasley of Kayani, Fran Villarmia Kahavai of Properties International Limited, Chinen and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated, A1A Electrician, and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi. To find out how to become a corporate sponsor, click Partners at thegoodlifehawaii.com. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, Hawaii's only local inspirational Christian talk show, on 99.5 The Word, weekdays at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight, providing opportunities to connect family and friends with Jesus Christ.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Tessa Longbons is Senior Research Associate with the Charlotte Logier Institute. She earned her bachelor's degree in communications from Thomas Edison State University. She writes on state and national abortion statistics, tracks abortion trends, and assists the data analytics department with research projects. Tessa, you talked about being pro-life because of science. Will you say more about that?
Yes, I think if you really look at the science and if you really look at the evidence, it's clear that a unique human organism comes into existence at the moment of fertilization, at the moment that sperm and egg meet. And so there's really no denying that when we're talking about unborn children, we are talking about individual, genetically distinct humans that are growing, that are maturing, that are on this pathway that will lead them to be born and then to grow, to go through all stages of human development. And so when I say I'm pro-life because of science, I mean that I can just look at the scientific evidence and see clearly that this is a human individual that we're talking about. But then when I bring in my religious faith, that is what helps me understand that human life is valuable, that it has intrinsic value, and whatever the stage, it is worthy of protection and should be respected, and that I should recognize the worth of each human individual that I see.
Have you been in conversations with pro-choice people who feel as strongly as you feel about pro-life, their convictions about pro-choice are equally as strong?
Yes, but actually many of the pro-choice people that I've talked with who disagree with me, take issue with my viewpoints, many of them don't disagree so much on what the unborn child is that they're concerned about women. They think that this is something that women need, that abortion is actually a loving option. I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with abortion. They don't like thinking about it necessarily. They don't want to address what is actually taking place in an abortion. But at the same time, they feel that it's cruel to deny women a choice and to put them in an impossible situation. And so they want to be loving and they want to not intrude on other people's decisions. And so a lot of what my research shows is that abortion is not helpful for women. It is not empowering for women. And that as women, we don't need abortion to live happy, fulfilling lives. And so I remind pro-choice people that I'm talking with that this is a human unborn baby that we're talking about, a unique human individual who is worthy of respect. And that also, we aren't forgetting about the baby's mom the baby's mom is unique and special and also created in the image of God, and she also should be supported and protected and empowered, and abortion is not what is going to do that.
There seems to be a false dichotomy that exists in the discussion, whether it's an either or. Are we talking about the unborn human life versus mother's health and well-being? Is that what we're looking at? Is it an either or is there an alternative?
I don't think we should accept it as an either-or proposition. We shouldn't have to choose between an unborn baby and the baby's mom. That is a false choice, but sadly, tragically, it's one that many women find themselves pushed into. I mentioned my research earlier looking at women's accounts of their experiences with chemical abortion that they've shared anonymously, just disclosing the impact that it had on them. And that was something that a lot of women brought up, that it wasn't, that abortion wasn't the best choice necessarily, that it just felt like it was the only choice. They had no other options. There was one person in particular who she said, they all tell you it's your choice in the moment, but you don't feel that it is. Being unable to afford it, unable to tell your loved ones, not having the help or feeling unable to support a child. All these things push you, blind you to a decision that you don't realize will destroy you. That's what this woman shared anonymously online about her abortion. And tragically, I think that's what a lot of women have experienced. And so just the availability of abortion, how widespread it is, how it's been protected up till now by the Supreme Court has just put women in this position where they do feel like they have to choose between themselves and their unborn babies. But we know that's not the truth. It's not the truth scientifically, and it's not the truth for how women should be able to fit into our culture.
Tessa, we've got just a couple minutes left, and we normally like to pray for our listeners. We've talked about a heavy subject today. And it's not, like you said, it's not an easy subject to talk about for various reasons. And I think prayer is vital. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to pray for someone who might be struggling with a decision, maybe struggling with the very issue, who may be struggling in other ways, not only in this way, but maybe more broadly, just having a tough time in life. Would you be willing to pray for our listeners?
Of course, it would be a privilege.
Please.
Lord, I thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation, difficult as it may be at times. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss these important issues that are only going to become more important as the issue of abortion is returned to the people to decide. And so I pray that you would be with anyone who is struggling with a decision right now about what to do about an unplanned pregnancy, about how to handle a situation with a friend or a loved one who has an unplanned pregnancy, I pray that you would be with them, give them wisdom, bring people around them to support them and love them, and please don't leave them alone. Let's remind them that there are people who care about them and want to help them. And I pray, too, for anyone who may have had experience with abortion, whether they had one themselves or someone they cared about, or maybe they even performed abortions or advocated for them. I pray that you would bring them to find forgiveness and restoration through your Son, that you would show them that they don't have to live with this alone, that this is something that they can be washed clean of through your Son. And I pray for anyone who may be listening and disagrees with the conversation that we've had. Thank you for their bravery and pray that they would be willing to have an open mind and more conversations. And Lord, I also pray for everyone who is just struggling with many different things right now. We know there are a lot of issues happening, a lot of things going on beyond this particular issue. And so I pray for your kindness and your mercy upon them and that you would just guide them and remind them that you are their ultimate source of comfort and security. And I thank you for the gospel. I thank you for your love and your forgiveness and for the opportunity to have this conversation today. In your son's name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Tessa, thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your heart and your sharing your mind and for being with us during this very important time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity, and it's been a privilege.
Timely words from Tessa Longbond's LozierInstitute.org. Dear friend, God's timing is perfect. And there's no better time than right now to share the love of Jesus with someone near you, just like Tessa has. And if you haven't done so, look, this might be the perfect moment for you to open your heart to Jesus Christ. Would you do that? And go to thegoodlifehawaii.com, click Get to Know Jesus. I've got a special video for you there. If you'd like to stand with us with your prayers, your support, to make a donation, go to thegoodlifehawaii.com and click Donate. And I thank you in advance. Job 10, 11, and 12, you clothe me with skin and flesh and knit me together with bones and sinews. You have granted me life and steadfast love. It's always a blessing to be with you. Thank you to Tessa Longbond's LozierInstitute.org. Until next time, along with my technical producer, Chaz Ontai, web designer Arlen Nagata, and guest coordinator Jan Yi, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let Him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life radio program is listener supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org. And may God richly bless you with The Good Life.
Just leave it to me. I'll leave.